Hello and welcome to episode 98 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
As ever, you can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can also comment, you can find links to social accounts, and if you want to ask us questions or comment on the show by email, you can do so at contact@nerdassemble.co.uk. Don't forget, if you've downloaded this episode but you want an easy way of doing it and you're not fond of RSS, we are also available on Stitcher and iTunes.
Basically, you have no excuse.
Pretty much.
No valid excuse.
Yeah. So what's happening this week, Paul?
This week, we've got a Fantastic Four cast told they didn't need to do homework. Sims 4 have premium subscription service. Yogg's cast Yogg Ventures Kickstarter has kind of died to death. And our main feature is, will mainstream comics ever grow up?
But first, the Fantastic Four news. I mean, nobody was really excited about this Fantastic Four reboot, were they? Right? Because...
Is it still going on? I thought they'd died.
It's still going on. I think they got a different director to when we were last talking about it.
I think the most positive thing about it is that it's not another one with the same cast as they had before.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly already been looking less traditional in the sense of following the way, look and feel of the Fantastic Four films and the comics, especially the comics, you know, considering that director Josh Trankel cast, according to Kate Mara, who's playing Sue Storm, aka the Invisible Woman, that he'd never been a fan of comics, and also said to her that he'd actually never read one. Mara went on to say, in relation to all of this, that I was going to read some, as in the comics, for this movie, but the director said it wasn't necessary. So, no homework.
Which is a bit worrying, considering I'm assuming they're going to try and keep some of the characters' actual initial tributes alive and well. Or are we just going to see an absolute rehash on it? Is it going to have a new origin story as well, just like the Turtles and stuff?
No cosmic rays. I don't know on that point.
Nope. They open up a tin of mutant beans. Well, that they digest and them for the rest of humanity.
Ang Lee proved anything with his Incredible Hulk movie is that it's sometimes bad deviating from the basic origins concept.
That movie didn't happen. That's been scrubbed from my memory forever. Bloody Hulk dogs and crap.
So far as I'm concerned, there is no Hulk other than Mark Ruffalo.
I'm still concerned by the fact that my parents did buy, I think they bought me a copy of the film, and I don't remember asking for it, and it was just kind of like...
It was, oh, thank you, why?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like what happened with me and the first season of Little Britain. I was like, okay, Aunt, sure, yeah, I've never shown any interest in this, okay.
It's a bit like an auntie who used to always buy me football cards for my birthday.
Awesome, not.
Which is like, I've never had an interest in football. I've always said how much I dislike it. I've always complained if it's on TV and switched it over if you've been round. And it's come on. So why did you buy me it? Why? See, that's real trauma there.
Getting back to the issue at hand, I think...
I'll just chip in there, because, you know, when you introduced it as in the Fantastic Forecast, it sounded like a really brilliant weather program.
But, as I was going to say, part of the problem is that when you've got an IP... like Fantastic Four, and same deal with Total Recall to a certain extent, is that if you start changing too many fundamental things about it, you shouldn't have bothered. You know, you're basically buying and remaking an IP, not trying to create something that's more original, if you know what I mean. I know that sounds bad, but Yeah. In the end, I mean, if they wanted to do Fantastic Four, but they want to change it so much that it's unrecognizable, just call it something else.
It probably will be recognizable as Fantastic Four. I'm not too. I mean, because
Human Torch will go flame on.
But I'm not so. I mean, I'm not somebody who tends to be too concerned about comic book canon. I've written about not being too concerned about it in the sense of I don't really care about it, but I kind of hate how it impedes my ability to read and pick up stuff.
Especially with superhero stuff, because they seem to be rebooting every other, you know, decade or so. Well, no, half a decade. You know, it's been 5 years since we've rebooted. Let's just completely change everything.
But I mean, because we'll have plenty of opportunity to talk about canon later. But I mean, sort of like actors being encouraged to interact with the original text. I would like to think that when somebody does an adaptation of a Shakespearean play, that the actors involved, when it is not a play that they're doing, it is obviously a film adaptation or perhaps a television adaptation. I would like to think that perhaps the actors, if they've not studied the play before in some capacity elsewhere, that they might watch a performance of it or, you know, read through the actual original playbook, especially if it's like, you know, kind of like a Baz Luhrmann style adaptation, sort of, you know, or like what happened with O, which was obviously Othello, where they kind of hyper-modernized things and that, just to see what the original was like. I would also like to think that some actors and actresses do suffer through the complete stories of like various publishing tales by like Charles Dickens. I like to think that, you know, some of them actually do read through the whole of even something simple like A Christmas Carol.
I think when it comes to kind of adaptations and whatnot, though, there have been good ones that have, say, for example, been jumped into the present. Like, say, for example, Romeo and Juliet. That was good because it was kind of modernized in a way that was kind of fresh and whatnot. But one of the core things that remained about it was not necessarily just the characters, but also the story.
It was recognizable, wasn't it? Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, I don't think comics really have quite that.
I don't think it's got the style. It's more just... It's like when you're trying to say, it's always a thing about writing, certainly with like novel writers, are told this a lot on courses and that. It's like before you start to do crazy shit with literature, narrative and all that, you need to look at the basics. You need to see what the basics are. And if I'm going to try and transmute this into a point about comic book adaptations, that means to me that you should look at the comics you're adapting. Yeah. You should actually look at how the medium works before you try to adapt it into something else.
How the characters interact and how they relate to each other as well, surely. You can't just go guessing that sort of thing.
I have thought, just thinking of, you know, various comic book adaptation films where I think, it would have been an idea for Joel Schumacher to never, ever, 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 ever have seen the original 60s Batman TV series. Or to never have been given a job directing.
That would have been the easiest option, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It's just, so I don't know if I'm being, you know, generous in this, and I know that's not characteristic of me. Maybe it's just, you know, trying to get away from some of the camp stuff that's been in, you know, some of the, you know, the source material and, you know, the adaptations and things with, you know, Fantastic Four. And
I want to see an original spin on it, definitely. I want to see them think outside the box and not just go through the whole, they go out to space, cosmic rays, Doctor Doom comes down, boom, there's the big baddie, finale, bang. I want to see them do a little bit something different with it, but I don't want them to just rip it to something that you don't recognise either. There's got to be a fine balance. A bit like a souffle.
It's not even like they have to go reading loads of like the main storyline stuff. Even if you read something that's like a one-shot, you know, like it's a standalone arc that involves most of the main characters, you're still going to kind of get a sense of like the dynamics between them. But I mean, a script doesn't, especially when it gets to a shooting script stage, it's not going to have tons of nuances about the relationships between the characters and all that, because actors don't like being told what to do.
No, exactly.
So when a script gets to production stage and shooting stage, there's a lot of detail that actually is removed from it in comparison to when it was first gone near a production, you know, gone near a studio or anything. That's like various details about the actual acting.
I mean, I think
that's gone.
I think to a certain extent, it's the previous kind of announcements about the new Fantastic Four film that has got me worried about this, because if you're a director and you're telling somebody not to look at the source material, that could be because of one or two reasons. Either you're not going to stick to the source material, or because you want the actors to be almost like genuinely surprised by the events. The latter is good. The former is, not so good.
But you know what? Maybe we're panicking over nothing, because what were those Tim Burton Batman rumours that Kevin Smith has gone into detail about previously? But Tim Burton not reading comics and then making those two Batman films that everybody loves.
They are really good old films.
Ones. Yeah, I know, but for some reason, everybody seems to love Tim Burton. I'm not a fantastic fan of him, but
I like some of his stuff, but others are a bit crap.
Oh,
Planet of the Apes.
Oh yeah, that was crap. But Batman,
well, they say
Batman,
there you go.
Batman and Batman Returns was ace.
I'm gonna move us on now to next story, because obviously I can't stop talking about The Sims 4. It's almost like I want it to not happen.
Oh God, not The Sims 4.
Lucy would kill you.
You say that, but I don't think she's going to be particularly happy about this latest piece of news.
What have they done now?
Well, it's a 20-minute demo video has shown what looks to appear, what it pretty much definitely is, a subscription premium service coming to the game. Like with Battlefield, you subscribe and you get stuff ahead of time, and obviously, at a reduced rate, or just bundled without having to pay extra.
Good old EAA.
And, I mean, considering the fact that they were like, oh, there's not going to be any swimming pools or toddlers when the game launches in September, that's led a lot of people, including myself, to wonder, is that part of the premium subscription?
Oh, you cynic, you. How could you think that of EA?
Yes.
I mean, just going by past experience and...
So they're holding everybody to ransom for a swimming pool and children?
Pretty much. Well, they're kind of shipping an incomplete game, in essence.
Well, you got to pay for puppy dog tails.
I mean, it's not confirmed that the pools and the toddlers will be restricted for you have to pay to add them in. But considering those were two aspects that had been available in the game for the past two games...
It's a good job you didn't have to pay for extra pools.
She got a bundle.
A humble bundle.
Yeah.
But no, can I just... DLC, download content. It should be stuff that's been added after the completion of the game. Take stuff out of the main game and sell it to them separately.
EA are not the first ones to do this, and there have been far worse offenders. I'm thinking of some of the Japanese games that came out a few years ago where the content was on the disc.
Oh, you're on about Capcom, aren't you?
Yeah, mostly. It was there on the disc, and you'd pay a few quid or something like that for a download key that was, less than like 100k or something, and you would unlock what was on the disc.
I remember that with Resident Evil 5, because the file sizes were so small that people thought that there's no way that that entire kind of large section of the game would be included. But by the same token, they already had a lot of the material already on the game disc. So it's a bit of a toss-up on that particular case, but I'm not familiar with all of the cases of DLC.
What's particularly galling about this Sims 4 situation is that they've had bucket loads of add-ons that were clearly optional in terms of their purpose in the previous games. Like, I've never bought anything like the frickin' IKEA pack or whatever. God, that can go do well.
There's an IKEA pack.
Or whatever. Was it two? Yeah, it must have been two.
I think it was two,
yeah. Yeah, stuff like that. It's like, whatever. I don't really care. But
are you serious about the IKEA pack?
Yes.
Yeah. Remember the good old days when it would be, stuff like that, because it was basically advertising, which is what it is.
Hmm.
You would get that. Yeah, you would basically get that as a freebie add-on because it was advertising. It's like, no, now you've got to pay for your advertising.
To be fair, I don't remember advertising that much in previous games, but one thing that I do remember is that they would advertise their own products. So, say for example, I think it's San Francisco Rush or something. I was, I think it was Midway, and there used to be like signs for like Mortal Kombat and
yeah,
kind of other Midway kind of games.
I've always considered stuff, that fair.
Yeah.
Because go on, it's your stuff. You might as well. It's not, you know, it's no skin of my nose.
No, that's what but, kind of what we do with Hex and Nerds, to be honest.
But yeah. Oh, it's a good job I approve.
But the other thing about this, though, is that whereas obviously stuff like the Copac, and there was a H&M, as you know, the clothes lot pack as well for two.
No,
I can't remember what the other packs, like commercial, if there were commercialized packs for free, because I spent so little time on it.
Wait, was it H&M that got that brilliant review?
It was them and IKEA from, was that from Ultra Brilliant? Or no, was it somebody else?
I can't
remember. One of the big name games journalists from the UK who still
but that, yeah, that was...
That was in like PC Gamer or something.
Yeah, yeah. I nod and approve. Which of course meant that EA hated it.
Yeah, wasn't they... Wasn't they?
wasn't the particular they? Journalist?
They was, like, was they?
I think we need to talk about something different in terms of the Sims 4 situation, because obviously we did cover part of this in the previous episode where we looked at the pools and toddlers situation. But it's just a larger problem to me with gaming. Like, it's like, oh, we want to... It's still this whole, we want to make it as a service, and if we could get you to subscribe and then never release a whole game again, and just we'll just add stuff to it and add stuff to it and add stuff to it. And obviously it also kind of implies that you have to have online access
times
as well, probably. I mean, that isn't confirmed for Sims 4, but I hate to think what the functionality is going to be like if you're offline.
I mean, I can understand to a certain extent the mentality of you're a big publisher and you've got to make money to survive. But by the same token, EA is taking this to extremes. They're basically just taking the piss.
Yes.
Also, I mean, it all kind of circulates around kind of like the free-to-play models. Oh, did you hear about the Google Play Store for the EU that they're having to get rid of everything that says, like, all the stuff that says it's free-to-play? And, like, name titles now, it's got to go because of that EU ruling the other week, of the month.
Well, anything that you actually have to... pay to get past a certain point, or you know,
or
that type of
buy
thing.
Extras in game after purchase, after download for free. Yeah, so,
cool.
But it just kind of reminds me of this model of like that we want to constantly get money off of people, and it's like, well, if you're constantly, the stupid thing is, if you're constantly asking for money from people through subscription stuff, there's only so many things they can subscribe to in a month.
Yeah,
and so you're going to be making people make tough choices, whereas if they can just buy something without having to, like, they might see something in a sale, whatever, it's slightly reduced, and they'll buy it that one-off. And sure, they won't play it straight away, but they'll be more inclined to buy it one-off, because they're not going to be like, oh, but I've got to start playing it now. Because if you've got a subscription-based thing, it's like you can't justify unless you're going to go and use it there and then, but then that means you're in higher competition
for everything else. Yeah, this is partly the fault of things like World of Warcraft, where they could just, you know, sit back and, you know, so long as the servers were working, they'd not only have people, you know, sometimes not playing for months on end, but keeping their subscription going. So, you know, money for nothing. But also, if a big expansion came along, they'd sell that. That wouldn't be included, which I always found a preposterous idea. And now you've got the... The problem isn't so much maybe DLC, it's the season passes.
Oh, God, yeah.
That people have, you know, fell for. And some of them have been, you know, decent enough value, but others, they've been bloody awful value.
Yeah, well, like some costume packs.
It's not just that.
Yeah.
It's like season pass for something like The Last of Us. There wasn't much content that came out for that in the end, was there really?
There was a lot of tat for the multiplayer, which I am never going to touch the multiplayer on Last of Us. I didn't play Last of Us for the multiplayer. Stop doing multiplayer on everything.
But yeah.
You've been told.
Yes.
So would you like extra multiplayer with that?
They had I'm sure they had a pack of hats
for
the multiplayer.
Maybe that would be a great comic idea. It would be like a drive-through kind of game maker type thing. Would you like multiplayer with that? No.
Supersize you.
Do you want hats with that? Do you want a sort of hats?
I could add two slices of download content for 50 pence.
But if you've got the season pass, it was like, I've never bought a season pass. I've had ones for free because the game I bought, the copy had a season pass included a few times. It's not happened very often.
I bought one season pass in my life.
What was that for?
BioShock Infinite?
BioShock Infinite.
Oh, good guess.
Was it worth it?
That was quite good, actually, wasn't it?
Burial by Sea, wasn't it?
Yeah, Burial at Sea.
Sorry, Burial at Sea.
But yeah, I really enjoyed that, and it tied up with the original BioShock, which I'm very happy about.
Story. Oh, good. In that case, it might be worth playing at some point.
Oh, it's definitely worth playing.
I suppose also Season Pass kind of makes sense for the episodic games, like the way Telltale have been going.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then when it comes to the, here, have some, multiplayer maps, it's like, no. And even people I know who are, really up on their multiplayer games, they're only going to want to play certain things multiplayer.
Mm. Yeah.
A lot. Because I keep seeing people go back to the same things again and again and again.
Team Fortress 2.
Zombies, COD.
Team Fortress 2, I don't actually know that many people who play, the Call of Duty games, exhaustively.
But the one thing I do see...
Counter-Strike, things like that.
But one thing I see people who do play COD is the ones that have got zombie modes for the multiplayer, they still remain quite popular.
Yes, popular.
Mm.
Certainly for the people that aren't too sort of worried about perfection, just kind of want to get in and just have some fun. I'm going to move us on to our next story now. Not that I want to diss another, geeky media outlet, but this Yogscast, Yog Ventures thing stinks a bit.
It also sounds like a yogurt product.
Yeah, it does.
It does to me.
Without any of the good bacteria.
Oh, we're going to start a war, Hex versus Yogs.
That would never happen. And also, we'd just be consumed through their, millions of fans, apparently. Yeah,
I have nothing against Yogscast. There you go. I just think Yogscast, Yogs Ventures. Oh, Yog Ventures. It sounds like an advertising campaign for a probiotic yogurt. just to my ears. But there you go.
But for those unaware of what happened, there was a Kickstarter once upon a time, in fact, a couple of years ago now, and they raised over $500,000. And the main thing from this Kickstarter, beyond sort of like tangible perks as part of stumping up money for it, was that you'd get a game by the end of this called Yog Ventures, which was previously being developed by Winter Cool, who between Yogscast and themselves, it appears to be in a severe case of mismanagement. And after Kickstarter fees and stuff that didn't collected in credit card fees and stuff like that, the hundreds of thousands that were left appear to have not been spent really on making a game.
And so, some of the price breakdowns that I was reading were just eye-watering.
Mm-hmm.
Things like they were paying artists $35,000
up front, not on delivery of segments of work or pay part now, do this later.
Actually up front, it's like, can you draw? I have used MS Paint. That's awesome. Here's $35,000. I have a job at LucasArts and they've said I can't do anything on anything else now. Okay, thanks, bye for the money.
this was apparently the incident that soured the relationship between Yogscast and
I'm sure it wasn't the incident.
It was probably several, but it was one of the main cases to sort of properly sour the relationship as far as Winter Cool are aware. Yogscast haven't released a full statement in relation to Winter Cool's statement about any of this. But it's just kind of it brings Kickstarter again for games into question. Because I'll tell you what, you look at a lot of the comics and graphic novels Kickstarters, that stuff tends to get made, tends to get shipped out. This, on the other hand, when it comes to games, oh, who was it who wrote an article last year that looked at like all the Kickstarter projects that had been launched in 2012?
Oh, I can't remember.
And like how, or like between sort of 2011 and 2012, like, and there were several hundred or something, and it was like, and the majority of them had passed their deadline for delivery of stuff as in a game, or at least, you know, an alpha or a beta, and didn't look set on track at all to deliver anything. And it was like more than 60% of the games that had been kickstarted hadn't delivered anything. It's just insane.
Really, yeah, it is.
Obviously, you know, there's the whole, you know, it's Kickstarter, you shouldn't expect stuff at the end of it. But when there's a particular creative area that can be promoted through it and can get money through it, that seems to quite often not deliver.
All it's going to do is tarnish the name.
Yeah, it's just, you know, why? Yeah, because the thing
is, if you do invest in something like this, you do expect to see something eventually, at least be kept up to date with information. I think if, as long as you've made, you know, if you've contributed something like this, and as long as they're being honest with you and keeping you up to date and saying, look, it's going to be a bit longer because we've had issues of this, this, and this. However, we are still working towards it, and it will be with you on such a date. You can live with that.
The thing
but
is,
just that, turn around and say it's not going to happen. Yeah. That's just...
I mean, I think that was part of the problem with the York Ventures thing, is that nobody was really being kept up to date in terms of the people who kickstarted it. I mean, that. I mean, was it Savvy Gamer runner Louis Proctor, or Louis P on Twitter? The amount of tweets I've seen from him in the last couple of months was like, so what happened to that money that YogsCast got for York Ventures? He'd been, like, every day there'd been, like, veiled tweet from him about that. And then finally this kind of comes out, and it's just kind of like, well.
It gives you a sense that it's going into, you know, it's a shame because it seems very similar to other industries like builders and that, where you suddenly have some cowboys turn up, do half the job, and then fuck off with all the money. And you're left with nothing. And it's just like, what the hell?
Apparently, because obviously there was like this sort of $500,000 figure raised, and... Obviously, Wintercool had started production on stuff, and that money got spent rather than trying to pay more traditional manners. And part of the issue was that contracts hadn't been drawn up properly to ensure this kind of thing didn't happen, in terms of like people suddenly finding work elsewhere and go, oh, I can't work for you anymore. I can't give you the money, and I don't have to give you the money back either. Bye. But apparently, it sounds like YogsCast managed to get like about $150,000 of the original money themselves, so they could at least fulfill sort of like the more physical levels
of the thingy levels,
you know.
It sounds like somebody just hasn't managed anything of it properly. Nobody's actually sat down and said, come on, what's going on? Let's get this sorted out. Here's a contract. Have it.
Can I just say, though, that, I mean, Kickstarter to me has always been a case of a group of people trying to get stuff done, you know, basically, as is, that's it. 35k for 2 weeks' worth of work sounds like an awful lot.
Well, it wasn't just it was meant to be for more than 2 weeks. It's the fact that he got paid up front. It was meant then to got, be. And then suddenly got that LucasArts job. And it was like, and that is a thing with creative industries, that some employers are like, no, you can't work on anything else once you get a job with them. With my work, my contract, it says, I had to tell them about Nerd Assemble and Hex Dimension, and they had to decide whether or not it would conflict with my time at work, that it would take up too much of my time, so I didn't have enough downtime and all that kind of thing. And they thought, nah, it's fine. I'll be fine, and I have been fine. But,
this artist should give the money buddy back then, just out of...
But then, you think there was no obligation, whatever contract he signed, or she...
No, but
which is a rather amazing contract.
Yeah, it is, because surely there would be a moral obligation. If I was that guy, personally, in his position, it'd be a case of, I haven't actually done the job. This doesn't feel right holding on to the money here, have it back. Or maybe that's just me.
For a lot of people, that would be. But
because, I mean, obviously, the guy's done a couple of weeks' worth of work, so he's produced stuff. So work out kind of a small
this is also the same person that I think they did also most of the concept art that went that was put into the Kickstarter. So it wasn't just work after the Kickstarter, but it was
okay. Fair enough. Then I'd keep some of the money, but.
But it, just because you've got a moral obligation, if there's no legal obligation, then for a lot of people, it's like, nah, it's my money now.
It's just the fact with this that they seem to have got around to hiring at least one, possibly, probably more artists.
They had issues finding a chief or sort of head programmer.
Yeah, now that's kind of a problem because I've seen some of the screenshots and it's supposed to be like an expansive open world adventure-y type thing, a little bit Minecraft-y and, look. And then it's like, oh yeah, we've got people who are drawing stuff and it is nice. We don't have person who can actually make a game.
Yeah.
Well, it's a bit weird. Look at these brilliant pictures of a fast hover car I've made. My name is Darren H7. Can you make cars? No, I am Darren H7. I draw cars. I don't make cars. Are you mental?
Yeah, like just, that.
Yeah, it's just
how? Stupid. It's ludicrous.
But at the same time, it also kind of like, with because I can't remember what the Kickstarter page was like because it's been so long since I looked at it. But it's people who, it also kind of questions like the ability of people to make correct decisions about backing Kickstarters. Because if there was no proper programmer kind of nominated within the Kickstarter documentation to say, oh yeah, and this person's going to be obviously doing the main freaking piece of work. If there was nothing to it, then I think people who do invest in some Kickstarters really need to rethink about how, which ones they go for. Like,
or at least how much they put in.
How much they put in, or people need to think a bit more. And I don't want to say that people who fund Kickstarter are stupid, because I've funded games and graphics on Kickstarter, and stuff's getting made for the games ones that I've backed.
There are some amazing things being made.
And all the comics ones I've backed, I've had stuff from now, including like the first Kickstarter I ever backed that finally came through, which was the package, which I did review on Hex in the past few months. But it's like the reason I backed Maya by Simon Roth is because I've met the guy and have a, I know him, we talk and stuff. And it's like, oh, that, I know on a personal basis that, so I backed it. But for a lot of other people, obviously, they're not going to have that relationship with the people involved in Kickstarter projects.
I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little bit unfair to some, people who have done Kickstarters, but it's fine when it's someone who is already in the industry that they're, they're working in, and they go to Kickstarter to fund something new that they otherwise might not be able to.
Yeah.
Because their experience, but it seems to be, the lure of Kickstarter seems to be to get people who are amateurs.
I think you
can be, their enthusiasm is above and beyond their planning, if not their ability.
I think if you are somebody who is unknown, I think you can still, raise funds through Kickstarter, but I think you're probably going to need to show that you've done most of the groundwork already. That stuff is already in production, which, I mean, it does annoy me that it never got funded, but the Forbidden Planet dude that we had on, guy that had a Kickstarter with huge graphic novel.
I can't remember, but I know who you
think. Yeah, I'm sorry, the name is as well, it's late, but
my defense is that I have always been utter shit at remembering names.
He'd worked on stuff, his artists had worked on stuff, and they had got quite a bit of stuff already done.
Yeah.
It's not enough to actually publish a thing. And obviously, it cost of printing, like 100 plus pages of graphic novel, is immense.
Basically, it's more than you'd think.
Yeah. So they clearly needed the money, but they got through stuff before, and they hadn't obviously had anything Kickstarter before. The package, which was a bit of a, in my case, it was a bit risky, because they hadn't done anything quite like it before. They had kind of worked vaguely in the area. So that eventually came together. It took more than 2 years to get my hands on the book. But I got it. But then there was something like Dead Root, which was mostly British, if not completely British, sort of horror comics anthology that was kickstarted. It was either at the end of last year, but I got a copy of the book in the last 12 months, less than 12 months after it'd been kickstarted. Cool. And James Henry has a comic in it, the Green Wing writer that we've previously had on the show, if I can pronounce things.
You're just about to say Green Wing Whiter.
I can't pronounce anything. It's all going to pot. Anyway, that had already had like a lot of work done on it. And the main, you know, the money was just really to kind of help fund the finishing touches, again, it all together with your proper layout. And again, it printed again. But obviously, you could have a thing, I mean, it's an idea, I suppose, of trying to have people work in lieu of like being paid. It's like, well, once we got the money, you get paid. And that can be quite hard to get creative people to agree to.
Yeah.
So that might have been why whoever's contracted on the your cast, your venture stuff, might have been like, oh, I'm not going to do anything unless I get some, you know, money. Then
fair point.
That could be how that happened. But because obviously if you do a whole load of work and then the thing falls through, that's really flipping naff, because obviously you've done all that work and you've got no money to show for the time you've spent on it.
Yeah.
Especially if you're already somebody in the industry, that was obviously time you could probably have spent on actual paid work.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah, which, yeah. Yeah.
So the whole thing's one great big mess. It is perhaps a good example of why you should make sure that you budget from this Kickstarter money, when you do a Kickstarter, for any legal help you might need in terms of drawing up contracts or looking over like copyright agreements and such.
However, you might not need to do that if you're just doing a Kickstarter for potato salad.
Oh, yes. That was on the Eurogamer comments, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah. We'll be linking to that. Well, not to the potato salad, but you can find it. We'll be linked to the Eurogame story.
It better be bloody amazing potato salad. And I already know it's not, because it's potato salad.
Oh, dear.
If it was potato salad, and then when you got it, it was like, you know, in my case, a lactose-free deep pan pizza edged with marzipan.
Oh, my God.
Then, oh, yeah.
All right.
Here's $10,000.
Let's have a catch-up with what people have been up to. Retroid.
Oh, God. Well, first things first, I have been watching season 2 of Hemlock Grove. Hemlock Grove being the place with weird things going on. Ooh. It's a little bit like a budget, slightly teeny version of True Blood.
Yes.
Wait, I thought True Blood was quite teeny.
Oh, you should see this.
No.
You should see this, and then you'll see precisely what I mean.
We can. It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
I know we can.
Yeah, the entire thing is there. So we watched it over about 5 nights, and we already knew that the second season was going to be wandering away from the original source material, which was at least one novel, so far as I know, of the same name, Hemlock Grove. And yeah, I'm not entirely sure what happened with the second season.
Does it appear that they had new writers?
I'll be honest, I didn't look at the writers. It's just...
Has it jumped the shark?
Oh, yeah, I think it has.
Hmm.
For anybody unfamiliar with the term jumping the shark, it's basically when a TV series kind of goes down, both in quality and in kind of audience figures.
Kind of when you're watching it and you're thinking, yeah, oh, that's a little bit far-fetched, but that's fine. That's also fine. That's a little bit fine. That's, oh, come on.
Mm.
You know, it's the, oh, come on
moment
when you're watching something.
Yeah. And
named after, it was Happy Days, wasn't it?
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
Where the Fonz literally jumped over a shark. On skates or something like that, or due to an accident or, you know, something or other.
That's
like that.
Right.
Yeah, and it was, oh, come on.
He might be able to dance, but jumping over sharks, I mean, yeah.
And can I just say that virtually every series out there has jumped the shark at least once?
Yes.
Yeah, there's always been at least one moment where you're thinking, when I come back to rewatching this, I'm not going to be bothering with that episode.
Sometimes... the show actually gets eaten by the shark, and it's just the corpse of the show that gets dragged along.
Yeah, if you can just think of, you know, an apt embodiment of Jumping the Shark would be any of those terrible films, you know, like Sharknado or Sand Shark, or, you know, where the entire premise of the film is, oh, come on!
Have you been up to anything else?
Well, I had a very quick upgrade of my, well, sort of sideways upgrade of my PC, mm-hmm. going from an AMD slightly budgety graphics card to an older but very capable, thanks very much, NVIDIA card. And this was a very quick upgrade. ..
Okay.
Which required, and mostly this was my lovely, wonderful wife, who you know, did this because she was upgrading her graphics card, and that's why I got her NVIDIA. It required us taking out the power supply. Well, she took out the power supply, switched it for another one, then found out that I didn't have any audio, and then we remembered that the motherboard I'm using has broken onboard audio, so I had to go dig out a motherboard, an audio card, which meant that I had to take out a USB card to fit that in, which, yeah, the entire thing took about 7 hours.
Yes, a quick job. Mm.
Yeah, because, well, the main thing was my power supply didn't have the right connectors to power this card, because it was quite a meaty, you know, card when it came out, and it required extra, you know, power supply from the BSU. And it's like, oh, God. But, yeah, my machine is now, you know, back and running, and probably better than it was before, minus a few USB ports. But it's meant that I was going back to a few games which I remembered had NVIDIA PhysX, which is a proprietary way of doing, you know, various, you know, like particle effects, physics effects for things, you know, for rocks tumbling, dust, smoke.
All those important things.
Yeah, all those, you know, the eye candy things, which, you know, don't actually matter, but if you know that you could have them and you don't, you want them. So I've been playing over the last 2 days. I went back to Batman Arkham Asylum.
Ooh.
Which I can now play with everything on max.
Yay!
At 1080p.
Sweet.
And, for a game that came out in about 2006.
No, not 2006.
2007?
No.
2008? Nine? No.
2009, because I wrote...
I saw 2006 somewhere.
No, it's 2009, because I wrote a review...
I thought that sounded too early.
I wrote a review of it and a first sort of level area game guide for trying to get a game job. Game writing job, which I did get.
So in 5 years, they've made Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, Arkham Origins...
And then we've got... With Arkham Knight coming up, yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
They didn't make Arkham Origins, though, did they?
Yeah, that's only two games by Rocksteady. Yeah.
Mm.
And there are about 2 years between those, so there were, you know, there were reasonable turnarounds. So
yeah.
So have you managed to get all the Riddler trophies on?
I have got all but three.
Ooh, not
as of, you know, this moment.
What are they causing you problems, the last three?
Yes. There was one in particular where it was, oh God, it was on the multi-layer thing where there were about three or four levels. And it just said, yeah, I'm in this room. Yeah, I think it was in the lift shaft in the actual asylum, you know, building itself. If anyone remembers the bit where you go down to, is it Killer Croc?
Yeah.
Yep.
And there was a particular, because it doesn't tell you what they are. You don't know whether you're looking for a visual puzzle, which would be a, you know, a question mark that you can only see in detective mode.
Yeah.
An Arkham lore thing, which, you know, which is like a stone slab. Or... Yeah, an actual just, you know, glowing trophy that's in a hard to, you know, see
there
location.
There is an Arkham lore slab in the lift area. It's not within the lift. It's in one of the bits you can get to from the scaffolding for the lift.
That is one where I have actually found it, but I spent a good 45 minutes just going up and down a lift shaft going, where the hell are you?
Did you find that there are any glitches with the trophies?
Not in
vaguely remember.
Not in Asylum. It was dodgy in City, and City was the last one I bothered to collect all of them. I was like, with Origin, because it was so buggy as a game on the 360, I was like, fudge Origins. I am not getting all the collectibles. I'll play it for the story. That's it. Bye.
I'll be doing City after I've done this, but...
City is cruel, mean, and you thought Asylum... It more than quadrupled the amount of trophies, and it was just... I wrote about that, and I was like, yeah, this is just fucking ridiculous. They didn't need this many collectibles at all.
Well, it can't be as bad as... What was it? It was Orange Box on 360. That had about 99 trophies. 99 achievements, sorry.
Jeez.
And yeah, a lot of them were just like one or two gamer points, if that. But yeah, I've been having a lot of fun going back to, because of course I finished the game. So most of the locations, it really is just, you know, there's no enemies. It's just wandering around trying to solve, you know, where these, Riddleth pickups or, you know, puzzles are. And it's great. And it looks bloody nice.
That's something. Cookie, what have you been up to?
I've been reading Nightmare in Year One by Scott Bailey, Scott McDaniel, and illustrated by... Sorry, by Chuck Dixon, Scott Bailey, and illustrated by Scott Daniel and Andy Owens. Really cool book. Really nice book. Following in the footsteps of the other Year One books that have come out, it follows Dick Grayson as he decides to come out of the shadow of Batman after a big argument that they've had, which you actually see in the book.
See, we're all themed, aren't we?
We are. And how basically his transformation into Nightwing, from Robin to Nightwing, affected Batman, the Teen Titans, and actually Dick himself. It's quite an interesting story. You actually saw why they fell out in the first place, which is quite interesting to see. And you actually see Batman fire Dick and basically chuck him out, which is a bit weird to see. And then you see special cameos by Batgirl, Superman, Deadman, as he explores where he wants to go and what he wants to do. He even goes back to his old circus origins for a little bit as well. It's really a good read, and I'd recommend it to anybody, to be fair.
I've only read the Superman Year One, the first volume, so far. I haven't looked at any of the others. But then I've been really off reading most DC lately.
You must have
lately.
Read Batman, though, haven't you?
No.
Batman Year One.
I've heard of the Year One things.
You haven't read Batman Year One?
I've read the original Batman Year One.
Yeah, that's the one I mean.
But there was another... But there's a Batman to complement the Superman one.
That'll be a Year Two.
Is it Batman Year Two?
No, I'm just guessing.
Year Two.
But I think there's a Year Two in the sense that it's like a sequel to the new Batman thing that happened around the long after the Superman one, and it's all confusing.
Okay. Well, this one really did actually just happen, because it even introduces Jason Todd into it a little bit more as well, as the replacement for Nightwing, which was quite interesting.
See, I only said in my head, who?
He's the second Robin before...
He's the Robin that doesn't get a happy ending.
Beg pardon?
Yeah. He meets up with the Joker.
I didn't know it was that kind of thing.
It was one of the most... I think probably it was one of the biggest stories they did at that point. That was going back to the 80s, was it?
Yeah. It was either the late 70s or like up to mid 80s.
One of the most famous Batman stories ever told. But Jason Todd was basically the Robin before Tim Drake.
Who?
Oh, fucking hell.
My major source of information, you know, for Batman is the Arkham series of games.
Well, you've seen Nightwing then, and you'd have seen the current Robin with his HBO staff. That's Tim Drake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jason Todd won't be in it, though, because he's sort of dead and buried. There you go.
Yeah. Paul, what have you been up to?
I have been playing The Legend of Zelda and its sequel on the 3DS via Virtual Console. So
cool.
The original was obviously on the NES, or NES, as I prefer to call it.
Famicom!
And, it's quite interesting looking back at it, because...
Oh, that sounds positive.
Yeah.
It's not been positive. I've been playing stuff beside him, and he's just been the frustration sounds of just, and like swearing, and...
That's because gamers these days don't know how lucky they are. They don't know they're born.
That's because back in our day, the games lasted a lot longer than 8 hours.
And that's because they would kill. They would grind you into the dirt.
That they do.
And you couldn't even save it back in our day either.
Except for The Legend of Zelda being like the first game you could save on cart, or one of the first games you could save on cart?
One of the first games. I know, I believe that the Japanese version of Metroid did allow you three save files, a bit like this.
So you're telling me you're saving the game as you're going along?
Sorry?
You're saving the game as you're going along?
I think you have to go into caves or something, don't you?
For what, sorry?
In Zelda.
To save the game.
Zelda. No, I mean, with the Virtual Console thing, you can kind of create restore points anyway.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a quick save.
So you're cheating.
It's kind of how games are played nowadays. So
it's not really a cheat, you can still load up the quick save and find that you're out of bombs, out of something else, and out of luck and hope and hearts.
Yep, that's what I used to do.
Yeah, that obviously there is still kind of the save system in there, which is basically when you die, you have the choice to kind of retry, save, or quit type thing.
Yeah.
I think part of the problem with games of that era is that their longevity relied on you learning the game, not necessarily learning how to control or learning, you know, kind of secrets and whatnot, but basically just learning how to
not die,
kind of to a certain extent defeat enemies, and to a certain extent, with the original Legend of Zelda, how to defeat a lot of enemies. Because obviously you kind of go with basically kind of a one screen's worth of kind of potential enemies. And it's only ever one screen. It with the original Legend of Zelda, it doesn't kind of scroll or anything. And I think I'm stuck on... Well, I was stuck on this one bit where... basically, due to a sequence of kind of enemy encounters and whatnot, it's more likely that you're going to die than anything else, because in order to kind of get the magic, magic flute or something like that, you have to kill 3 Dodongos in a room. They can only be killed by bombs. You can only carry 8 bombs at any one point. So once you kill those Dodongos, you go through a couple of screens that are fairly okay enemies to kill, and then you get the Dark Nuts, an entire screen full of them, which you have to kill before you can get the secret entrance. You go through secret entrance, and then you pop up on another screen, and you have to kill a load more Dark Nuts before you can actually exit the screen, and... then I think you can get close to the whistle. There is one problem, however, and that is that unlike most of the enemies, I think it's especially the Dodongos, as well as the Dark Nuts, they respawn once you die. Which means that you can basically have your health full of hearts. You go to the last screen, get killed by a Dark Nut, go back to the beginning of the dungeon, and you have to basically hunt for more bombs. the only way that you can get more bombs is by random drops by enemies. So you have to kind of scour the dungeon to search for enough bombs in order to kill the Dodongos, in order to get to the next screen. And yeah, it basically just peeved me off, because most of the game is like, you go through and I think certain enemies, if you've kind of killed them before, they don't reappear. These ones do. And the only way to kill the boss of that dungeon is to use the magic item.
And so I've heard him cursing and swearing beside me as I've been playing Skyrim on the telly via my laptop. Skyrim. And that was going well.
Cut me off!
Yeah, I'm cutting you off.
Up until that, what was the earliest Zelda you'd played?
It was actually the first Zelda that I played. I think I briefly managed to play Legend of Zelda before. I think it was kind of swapped, or had to go back. So I think that when I was a kid, there was kind of a swap shop that we used to go to.
What, the Super Nintendo version?
No, the NES version.
Ah, right.
And then I did get Legend of Zelda 2, which is Adventures of Link, on the NES.
Which is a vastly different type of game.
Yes, it is vastly different, but it's kind of interesting at the same time.
It's sort of seen as the gingerhead stepchild.
Yeah, in a way.
Of the Zelda series.
And then after that, because I've never really been into handhelds. I mean, I've owned like Game Boy Advanced, DS, you know, 3DS, PSP, but I don't really like to play on them too much. I'm more of a console gamer, which is why I never really played much of, say, for example, I think it's Link's Awakening and stuff like that. I kind of jumped straight to the N64 Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
You really should play Super Nintendo Zelda Link's Awakening.
Yeah, I think I have got that on Virtual Console for the Wii.
And the Game Boy Color Zelda games are very good as well. Can personally recommend those.
Yeah.
See, old Nintendo games I played you haven't. I'm a bigger Nintendo fan than you.
As I was hinting at, I've ended up on Skyrim again, and this is mostly due to recent events. I've kind of made a point of not joining any factions bar the 10 minutes I was in the companions, and then went to a previous save file because I realised why I was getting so fed up with factions and guilds, and I've just been crafting the bejesus out of stuff whilst using mods. Lots of mods that don't work with Steam Workshop.
Woo! Defeats the point of Steam Workshop. Woo!
There's a surprising number of mods, and I'm not the only person that's noticed. This has been an issue that's been ongoing for not just Skyrim, but Left 4 Dead 2 and a couple other games for the last few years, and nothing's been done about it, whereby you will have an entry in Steam Workshop, you hit subscribe, and the data the files basically involved for that subscription do not get downloaded to your computer, which therefore means that you don't have the files when you try to play the game. And no amount of reinstalling and installing whatever is going to sort it out. It is a problem their end.
In theory, Workshop is a great idea.
And there's a couple of things which I've managed to get working through it. Previously, Frostfall, which is now no longer available in Steam Workshop because it has A, exceeded the 100 meg file size limit for Steam Workshop files, and two, because it turns out the creator of it was getting a whole load of abuse on Steam Workshop and was like, I'm not even leaving, they didn't even leave like the previous version on there. They were like, fudge you guys, it's gone. So if you previously had Frostfall, subscribed prior to the removal, which was in September, October last year, then you've still got it. It's just obviously it's not an updated version or anything. You've still got it in your data files. But you will get free websites like the creator's website and I think like Nexus now instead. And that's what I had to resort to for a whole load of mods, was going for Nexus mods. It was just ridiculous. Like a whole load of stuff I'd found that was reasonable, I've had to go through and do the complicated stuff where you like copy the files into the data files under like common app data for Skyrim. It's not simple, and it obviously won't auto-update at any point.
And
well.
that was entirely the sort of crap that Workshop was supposed to.
Yeah. But yeah. If Workshop won't download the stuff, then yeah, it's not much use. But I've downloaded a lot of crafting stuff. Yeah. I've got managed to get, I mean, because I don't want to use anything that automatically tells me the stuff to do with alchemy. I managed to download through Nexus a book that lists mm-hmm. all the alchemy ingredients and what their positive and negative effects are. So you don't automatically know anything, but you can research stuff and then go, well, if I combine this and combine this, they both have paralysis aspects that my characters are unaware of in terms of their learning of alchemy, but if I do it, then they will then learn it and I'll get XP at the same time because obviously I've made a thing, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
And I downloaded some mod to make Lord of the Rings weapons. So, so now my wood elves go around with an elven sword and...
do they glow?
Yes, and sting as well. What else did I download? A cooking mod, can make some more food. Downloaded a herbal tea mod. I can make tea that does loads of cool stuff.
I don't approve of tea.
Yeah, approve of tea.
Earl Grey?
No. Hot or not? I don't approve of tea. I am English.
What do you drink coffee or?
On occasion, yes.
Okay.
But I don't.
You're not a very hot beverage drinker.
No.
I also downloaded a fishing mod, which is really great fun if you've got Frostfall as well, because basically you can set up like your campfire, your tent beside a lake. Sort out your fishing rod with some bait, which can be like insects you've got in ingredients or small pieces of meat. Put it there, you know, sort of waiting in the water, you know, with the bait and that in the water, sit in your tent to keep warm, and then wait for the line to ping, just like actual fishing. Yeah, cool. Except, you know, you're not actually getting cold and wet yourself.
That's awesome. I'll have to tell Mrs. Me about that, but I'll be staggered if she doesn't have it because she likes fishing in games. Any RPG that's got fishing in, you know, like the Breath of Fire or, you know, things like that. Yeah, there she is, fishing.
Twilight Princess?
Yeah. Is it always got fishing? Right, that's the next few hours gone.
And I downloaded a mod that allowed me to make all the, not like super special clothes, but like pretty much all the regular clothes through a tanning rack using obviously stuff you acquire. And I think that's pretty much all the crafts. Oh, I downloaded, it's not 100% pervy, but it just looked kind of cool huntress outfit that you can craft. That has like, it just, you know, looks like a cool lady archer.
For some reason, I don't trust the internet when it comes to huntress or anything like that. You know, outfit mods, because it's like, yeah, that's... When they do a huntress outfit, it's rarely a practical huntress outfit.
It's a bit impractical. There's a bit of a window around the chest area, but it's not the worst window I've seen in a chest area on an outfit like that. Also downloaded like somebody gone out of their way to create, was it the Freya, like Norse god armor?
Cool.
It's inspired, it's not obviously Freya's actual armor. And it's like, it's just 100% practical. And it looks okay, but it's got a huge skirt on it. Like, I don't understand why they were creating, like, oh, we're trying to create like realistic ladies' armor. And I'm like, yeah, but if you're a lady in you don't want a skirt. Like, it's like almost a metallic skirt. Like,
oh, that sounds really useful and practical.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh no, if you're going to make practical ladies' armor, there just wouldn't be anything too girly about it, and you wouldn't have like curving in sort of like breast area in the breastplate, which creates a weak point that you can easily dive through.
When it comes to a skirt, though, I mean, technically it would be practical for certain things, like going to the loo. More practical than a suit of armor.
Only just. Not very much.
A little bit.
But then it still had greaves, so you still have to fuss around with the greaves, you know, in this practical issue situation. Oh, that was some of the chisel. Oh, I downloaded like a hunter's lodge. That was like just outside.
Oh, yeah.
Just to see what that was like. It was okay, but there wasn't like, it was more, oh, fill it with stuff, but then it was less useful than like creating a basic house through hearthfire. Because you had tanning rack, but you didn't have anything else for making weapons and armor.
So far as I know, that mod came out before they did, you know, the official DLC house.
Yeah.
So.
But I mean, like, it has been updated to include anything, you know, a bit extra useful. And so I've been slowly building a house, Lakeview Manor. Been slowly building. I've had that one before. Nail by nail, and put that one together.
I'm thinking that isn't it nice that they're fine with these mods and they don't think to monetize it with a subscription like with EA and Sims.
Yeah.
Because after all, I've said before, when the original Sims came out, there were lots of free mods.
Yeah, yes. I remember those. Yeah.
And they very quickly, once they figured out how to, sell them instead, got sort of tidied away.
I haven't just been playing Skyrim though. I have actually been watching a lot of The Mentalist, which was birthday present. I've got seasons 4 and 5 on DVD, and I've been knitting and watching Patrick Jane, solve murders and various other crimes in the only ways.
Being all clever and casually insulting.
Yes, best kind of way.
As is his way.
I remember you originally described him as kind of a nice version of a house.
I still stand by that.
Really? After the stuff that he's done in the past couple of seasons?
There was pretty good reasons for nasty stuff that went down, which I'm not going to spoil because I know people who haven't watched beyond certain points who may be listening to this. And also there was this time where, like, last Wednesday, Paul and I went and watched Transformers Age of Extinction.
I'm sorry.
And he did tweet back at me, but I did tweet at Muckbode that he does need to set up a help group for people who have seen the Transformers films, the Bay ones, obviously. We are seeing Mr. Commode on Saturday because he's doing another cinema presentation at our local cinema.
You should have just left it as we're seeing the seasons.
Is he doing Transformers?
No. Brazil. Thankfully.
That's a bit like Transformers, in that it's a film.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think.
But
yeah.
I liked Brazil, so.
I think most people.
That's where it differs.
Do. Yeah, I'm not sure which cut of the film we're seeing, because obviously there's the. Like, I'm assuming it's not the telly cut, which has all. Or especially not the American telly cut, which has loads of important stuff taken out of it.
But you keep on saying stuff. Telly. I'm thinking like Teletubby cut.
No.
What the hell kind of cut is that?
I'm going to move us on to our feature discussion for the final part of the show, where I wanted to ask, will mainstream comics ever grow up? Do they need to? Does it matter? Why?
Yes, it does. There we go. That's my contribution.
I think Marvel are doing a good job.
Yeah, because
I can't get used to that. I'm used to, when I was reading comics probably about, over a decade ago now, DC was the grown-up one and Marvel was the...
Yeah.
Not only a terrible company, but terrible comics as well.
Yeah.
So I'm all confused now.
It'd be more than a decade ago. If it was the early 90s, I could understand the criticisms being leveled at Marvel. Because I've read some of that. But the reason we're talking about this is because of the whole, the Falcon's becoming Captain America, as in Sam Wilson.
Which and I have to say, I don't really like the idea of.
Mollinger is going to a lady who will become Thor, if at least for a while, because Thor, Odin's son, has become a tiny bit unworthy of wielding the hammer.
Did you say Mollinger?
I can't pronounce it for the life of me.
Mollinger. That's your best pronunciation.
That's my best pronunciation of it.
Bollinger.
Have we got it?
Thor got sacked from Mollinger and Co. last Thursday. He will no longer
Mollinger.
Be
Mollinger. Mollinger.
That's a bit better.
That it's down there. We're looking at our outline.
Molnir.
I thought Mollinier or something like that. Yeah. Because after all,
that hammer thing he's got.
He's mallet.
He's mallet.
Yeah. I think it's going to be quite cool seeing a female
Timmy.
Take up the mantle of Thor.
We do not speak about Timmy Mallet. I was within 100, well, I estimate at least 200 meters of him at one point this past week and a bit.
He's the third Asgard brother.
Timmy Mallett performed a show at the holiday park that we stayed at the other week whilst we were apparently hunting monsters. No, we avoided the show because it's Timmy freaking Mallett. And we have...
I have
fond memories of him because it was the only way that we could watch the Transformers cartoon series.
I was going to say Transformers and... Oh God, what was the other one?
See, and I thought it was bad having to sit throughout and deck to be able to watch Pokemon, but obviously your suffering was far greater.
These were every morning or so, and it did actually mean that you got...
Ride Away Club.
Yeah.
Or
oh God, I can hear the music in my head now.
Okay, we'll stop that. Let's talk about comics. Talk about Thor and Captain America.
I do not... Like, I love the idea that they're going with sort of a new character for Captain America, that he's going to be black. Yeah, that's cool. I think they missed the trick by not having him as a new character, though, if I'm being honest. A totally brand new character. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. I'm going to mull that over, because that's an aspect that I haven't actually read anywhere, anyone else saying. And now that you say it, I kind of agree. It would have been riskier.
The thing is, Sam has been the Falcon for 10 years. He has been the Falcon for 10 years. And what I don't want to see, I like Sam as he is. I like his character and I like how he's developed. He has been a mainstay of the Marvel Universe for over a decade. So I just don't want to see him becoming something else, if that makes sense.
I mean, does...
I don't understand why.
Yeah.
Do you know what I think would have made the perfect thing for the new Captain America? And this is going to sound really weird. But if you're going down the whole diversity route, why didn't they have a new Native American character?
Ooh, that would have been good.
I don't think
that would have been quite as... Yeah.
It's really hard. I'm trying to think of any representations of Native American superheroes that hasn't involved feathers somewhere. I'm struggling.
You see, my mouth was opening to say Turok, and then as soon as you said didn't involve feathers, it shut again.
Because I've seen,
it was the Warpath, wasn't it? But he had feathers in his hat as well.
I've seen quite a few contemporary Native Americans due to subject matter of dissertation I did the one time, and they don't all wear feathers in their hair these days.
Right. To be fair, Captain Britain doesn't drink tea, so I think... Yeah,
I mean, it's just like every time you see a British character, they've got a Stonehenge with them.
But I mean,
mind you, if you've ever seen British characters or the British episodes of Murder, She Wrote, it's almost that bad.
I think Family Guy's worse than British characters.
No, I actually think that's more representative of Britain than Murder, She Wrote, because everyone's either a cheeky cockney or a lord. Or a cheeky cockney who doesn't realise they're a lord.
Going back to the comics.
Comics. And as for Thor being a woman, I really like the idea. I like how it's going to be a fresh character. Can I just ask them to do one thing?
I've got
this horrible sneaking suspicion of the whole it's a brand new character and that. Please don't let it be their half-sister that they've just found.
I'm hoping
is that when the inevitable Thor regains his right to wield this hammer again thing eventually happens, that the woman that's been Thor during that time isn't majorly sidelined in a kind of death-like manner.
She isn't fridged.
Yeah, it would be nice for her not to be fridged. And to then further motivate Thor.
In that case, morgued.
To be honest, if they do it right, she could actually become a kind of half ally, half rival to Thor.
Which would be quite nice.
Yeah, it would.
That would be cool. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where they take it. I do like the new direction. As I say, the only real big thing I've got is losing the character, the Falcon.
Can I just ask Cookie? With the Falcon, do you consider him Captain America's sidekick?
No, I thought he was his own character, to be fair. He's had his own series. He's had his own books before.
He's
even got his own enemies before as well.
I think that's possibly why a lot of people feel that, you know, he's the wrong choice for being Captain America, because that's almost like a promotion type thing, which kind of does kind of mean that Captain America is up here, Falcon is down there.
From what I've seen lately, he's been more and more sort of Captain America's sidekick, especially since the film came out, if I'm being totally honest. But, I mean, no, I just think he's had 10 years and he's a good character. Why, you know, I mean, and to be fair, he's not the first black Captain America either. The first black Captain America was actually in a Marvel comic published around about 10 years ago.
Okay.
That this is all news to me.
Yeah, there it was. I put it in the Hex Comic Roundup, actually. It was a guy called Isaac, I think, who had who was another member of the Super Soldier program as well. And he actually donned the outfit and shield for a little brief stint as well.
Bringing this back round to the idea of will mainstream comics ever grow up, I would say currently Marvel are the ones that are experimenting the most with representation and also trying to target alternative readerships. Because this whole thing was announced on The View.
Yes.
Which is not something that is normally watched by comic book geeks who happen to be male and very white.
Yeah.
And very American.
I think they've been very clever. They've noticed there is a big gap in the market. They've been very pleased with how Miss Marvel's gone. The new Miss Marvel. It was their first Muslim superhero. That's gone really well from the sales and everything I can see. So it is time they grew up a little bit and diversified, and I'm glad they are doing it. Whereas DC seems to be going backwards, not forwards. They seem to be very much going backwards to where they used to be.
I would love to know what the hell's going on with DC, because they used to be, you know, oh yeah, you know, if you're going to read comics, read, you know, DC stuff. And preferably, read Vertigo.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's hardly been anything announced from... There's been a couple of new book series that look quite interesting coming from Vertigo in the next couple of months, but that's about it.
Well, what do you expect after you, like, kill, like, one of your main titles, aka Hellblazer, after 300 issues, and then put it in Poncy DC New 52 universe?
Boo! I may have said this before.
I think Emily's said this before.
It's just stupid. What I don't get, I mean, they've...
As a protest, I'm just going to go back and reread original Hellblazer.
They were actually being quite forward-thinking when Batgirl came out as being a lesbian.
Batwoman, sorry.
And then they screwed her over by not allowing her to marry her...
Which is what we discussed in episode 52 of this podcast.
Yeah, but I don't think I was here for that episode.
Wow, you know these podcast stuff off by heart, don't you?
I do like to try and double-check when we've... You talked about something a bit before, you know.
But I mean, what I don't get is why they're going back. So I just can't understand where they're going. They used to be, if you wanted some good, light-hearted comic stories like Retroid said in the 90s, you look at Marvel. If you wanted some darker, meaningful, more sort of emotional stories, you'd go to DC. Now, you just don't seem to have it. I mean, that. Although I've been reading Nightwing, I would like to mention that was actually published about 7-8 years ago. Nightwing Year One.
Yeah.
So it's not part of the New 52 or anything.
Well, the Year One stuff anyway, because they've been doing it with like Year Two, that isn't part of the New 52.
Oh,
anyway.
Is it Earth 2? Yeah, Earth 2.
Yeah. But the thing with DC is that, they think they're being mature, but what they class as mature is kind of like extreme violence, psychopaths, tits and ass. That's what they seem to be thinking is mature, rather than the representation of their characters as people.
It's the mature, which is, if you ask someone who's 14, what's mature?
Yeah.
That kind of mature.
I was just thinking like the video the game sort of, kind of logic, it, kind of mature.
Immature, mature.
Yeah. Mm. It which is kind of pathetic, and there's a lot of older DC series now that happened like in the past 10 years that I don't think can happen now, like something like Gotham Central.
Yeah.
I don't think that could happen now if somebody put that forward. Obviously, Batwoman we've discussed, and that doesn't look like it's going to be remedied. anytime soon.
Which is kind of interesting considering what's been happening in America. Both the legalization of gay marriage and the kind of turning over of bans on gay marriage on like a statewide kind of thing.
But obviously it's not all states and it's only in certain states. But then I would argue that perhaps the states where there is an issue, they're not necessarily the states that are also reading lots of comics. So
I wouldn't like to speculate, to be honest.
I just like the idea that you've got these progressive storylines, and you've got the parents who'll be thinking, comics are safe. In the superhero comics, we're assholes. But let's buy Bob and Bobette, because if it's the Midwest, they're probably called Bobette. some comics and let them read that, and they're actually getting an alternative message in their heads that, hey, these things are all right.
By the way,
your parents are assholes.
I suppose there is the risk that America could head into a new comics code authority mesh thing again.
Yeah. So good luck with that, because only way you could previously buy comics would be, from newsstands,
I don't think they could actually do the Comics Code Authority sort of thing again, because it's not just that. In recent years, there was a case put forward. I think it was either the Supreme Court or a court not far below it that was about changing the ESRB ratings for games over there to be more like there would be more legal clout behind them.
Yeah,
and there was a whole freedom of speech argument made against that move, and so it didn't happen. I'm not sure if it's going back. It's a thing that I think that might still be tumbling about at the moment. The ESRB ratings are still not like stupidly enforceable on that for games, and so if they made that kind of ruling for that entertainment product, which is apparently even worse than other media's because you can interact with it and blah blah, then it'd be even harder to make an argument these days to have a Comics Code Authority for kids comics in America. And also it was like you could publish stuff that wasn't vetted by the code authority.
You just wouldn't have the stamp and you wouldn't be carried by a lot of...
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Which would have been a bit risky. But I don't think that kind of risk, again, because of digital, but also because of the fact that comics have moved from the 1950s out of drugstores and into highly specific shops and online presences. So, yeah.
And I'm thinking, the idea being... are comics going to, grow up, or, do they need to grow up? Part of that is, are you meaning comics in general or superhero comics, which I regard as two different things?
Because we read Sex Criminals
in
the past month, and that's pretty grown up, and not in the kind of DC grown up way. It's pretty grown up.
It's kind of grown up in that it kind of takes a concept that is fairly adult, but instead of going about it, it actually thinks about kind of the situations and whatnot, and it goes, well, it'll be interesting to do this.
And the suggestion that both characters have bi-curious moments as well, both main characters.
Cool.
And relationships.
Going back to Sam Wilson and the female Thor, a minute. Do you think that people are angry because they're feeling like Thor and Captain America or Steve Rogers is being usurped? Is it them getting rid of those characters?
Steve Rogers is going to be his sort of confidant. He's going to be his mission control, isn't he?
And Thor's still going to be around. I think it's just the fact that there's...
I don't know if Thor's going to be still around, because obviously if he's lost his powers, maybe he'll just turn back into whichever human he's been residing in, if he's still residing in a human.
It depends if they've done that, or if it's more of a movie kind of thing. It might be more movie-like at the moment. But he's still going to be around in some capacity. It's just like...
I should hope so.
But the reason... I think the reason people are kicking up about it is because it goes against canon...
It's change, isn't it? Everybody always fears change. As soon as you change something that people like, there's always going to be people who are going to go.
I fear change,
but that's why I use my my debit card instead, so I never get change.
But it does. It seems to be something, especially the comics community, gets particularly hot and bothered about is change.
Yeah.
I think it's warranted when certain obvious money grabbing universe reboots happen.
Mm.
I think it's warranted then. But when it's something like this, which is actually going to make the comics more inclusive rather than exclusive.
Yeah.
It's going to add a fresh spin on it. It's going to freshen everything up in it.
Absolutely. Let's be honest. I think part of the thing is, though, is that if they were to, kind of make new superheroes or even just new characters that are representative of different things, they still wouldn't be at the same level as, kind of the A-list as well, which is obviously kind of a potential problem there. So, I mean, even though we've got, kind of a, John Stewart, Black Green Lantern, for example, it's like he's still not kind of seen as kind of necessarily the A-team, as it were.
But it's just the idea of obviously having diverse characters who get to keep series. I mean, I suppose part of the issue is that it's certain groups that still buy the most of comics, but then that's partially because marketing. Like, they haven't been marketing to where alternative markets are, hence the whole the View announcement for Thor and that. So they could try and target the kind of market that's been eating up like Ms. Marvel, not literally. And there was Liz Watson wrote a really good piece over at the Daily Beast about this whole thing, kind of like showing how it's a bit hit and miss in terms of if Marvel are really making a greatest step in the right direction in comparison to the DC. And she said, Marvel's efforts might not feel like enough. Why not launch titles starring independent black or female characters instead of having them temporarily adopt another's mantle? But the sad reality is that the comics industry is too insular to foster any kind of radical change. It still remains incredibly difficult for new comics and heroes to get a stronghold in the marketplace. Most new titles are cancelled within a matter of months, especially as comic prices rise. Readers seem to be sticking with the titles they know and love. Consequently, Marvel is working within the system, and to be fair, it's a system which they helped create to introduce a wider variety of heroes to the consumers buying familiar titles like Thor.
Yep.
And so, it's trying to get that balance because it's like, well, we could introduce new comics, but people won't read it. It's like, Gail Simone's The Movement. That's been cancelled in the last few months. And that had quite a diverse range of characters and protagonists who weren't, DC mainstays. And, I mean, that was DC, obviously. But then it was Gail Simone, so you got balanced up with that. Gail's, pretty out there with heavies.
I'll tell you
what,
though, if the movie rights were picked up for it and they made a movie, they'd soon pick it up just like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe it's kind of DC and Marvel kind of having just too high a, kind of, we must earn this much profit in order for this to continue.
Which is sad because, in a way, they're in the perfect position. Marvel now has a load of successful movies to its name. And it's part of Disney now, isn't it, Marvel?
Yeah.
And you've got DC, who are part of Warner Brothers. So come on, use it to experiment with.
But I think the way that comics are marketed, though, it's always, I mean, they're less visible than games, but they're marketed in very similar ways in terms of kind of the way they try to attack what they think are should be the intended audiences for the end product.
Yeah.
And it's just like the way they market it isn't inclusive to other groups. Like it's kind of, which is kind of stupid because what Geek Media. Sure, it might be mostly male-dominated and dominated by a lot of guys who are quite white and a bit waspy about the girls or just generally, kind of like Caucasian thing going on. But increasingly, they're not the main household income earners. So for entertainment media, in order to actually survive, they do genuinely need to pursue other demographics.
Yeah, I think the thing that you'll notice is that, you know, basically there's fans of the films and there's fans of the comics. And you'll get the fans of the comics that will go to the movies and be like, either yay or no.
That's but different.
You won't get many people that have watched the films, that like the films, that go, ooh, I'll see what the comic's like. Nah.
That connection's not made.
Exactly.
A lot of the time, yeah. Even though my mum has loved the two Thor films, mostly because of Chris Hemsworth, she has shown no inclination and wanted to read the comics. And in all fairness, the Thor in the comics is worse than the Thor in the films anyway. I can't, handle Thor. Young Avengers Thor's fine, but like adult Thor's just like, why? My dad enjoyed Kick-Ass and Kick-Ass 2, has shown no interest in reading the comics, though perhaps that's for the best considering that the comics are far more violent than the films.
Definitely.
I just think there was a bit of a renaissance in comics doing, you know, different things. The late 90s. You had a lot of independence, you had a lot of breakout publishers that were doing very interesting things. You had Cerberus doing interesting stuff as well. So that was great. But then it just seems to be that, you know, superheroes are being treated as, you know, they are the be-all and end-all of comics, and they're not. So I don't know. It's a bit like, to me, superhero comics are a little bit of a sort of a teenagey thing.
Because they're quite a power fantasy style genre anyway, which is quite an immature form of storytelling, as it is anyway. But I'm afraid I think we're going to have to wind up this discussion because we have talked a lot.
We'll have to continue it in a future episode.
I'm sure some other mess up will happen. What's the website we've previously talked about that counts how many days since DC has made a
FUBAR?
So anyway, that is it for tonight. So it is goodbye from.
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Paul, aka OneArmed_Cookie, on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as @paulblewett.com. No, wait, @paulblewett, sorry.
And good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter @EK6891. You can find Nerds Podcast on Twitter @NerdsPodcast. You can find the site and all the shizzle that goes with this episode and all the other episodes @www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes and Stitcher. Don't forget we're on Facebook and Google+ as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Don't forget to check out hexdimension.com. We had a very interesting sci-fi comics sort of roundup go up on Monday. I might have a thing that might make you cry going up when this episode's up. So
about onions.
Is it about onions? Might be about onions. There'll be layers. But good night.